The Scholar's Tale. The River Lethe's taste is bitter. Saul Weintraub and his wife Sarai had enjoyed their life even before the birth of their daughter. Rachel made things as close to perfect as the couple could imagine. Sarai was 27 when the child was conceived. Saul was 29. Neither of them had considered Poulsen treatments because neither of them could afford it. But even without such care, they looked forward to another 50 years of health. Both had lived their entire lives on Barnard's World, one of the oldest but least exciting members of the hegemony. Barnard's was in the web, but it made little difference to Saul and Sarai since they could not afford frequent Farcaster travel, and had little wish to go at any rate. Saul had recently celebrated his 10th year with Knightenhelzer College, where he taught history and classical studies, and did his own research on ethical evolution. Knightenhelzer was a small school, fewer than 3,000 students, but its academic reputation was outstanding, and it attracted young people from all over the web. The primary complaint of these students was that Knightenhelzer and its surrounding community of Crawford constituted an island of civilization in an ocean of corn. It was true. The college was 3,000 flat kilometers away from the capital of Bassard, and the terraformed land in between was given over to farming. There had been no forests to fell, no hills to deal with, and no mountains to break the flat monotony of cornfields, bean fields, cornfields, wheat fields, cornfields, rice paddies, and cornfields. The radical poet Salmet Brevi had taught briefly at Knightenhelzer before the Glennon Height Mutiny, had been fired, and, upon farcasting to Renaissance Vector, had told his friends that Crawford County, on South Sinzer on Barnard's World, constituted the 8th circle of desolation on the smallest pimple on the absolute ass end of creation. Saul and Sarai Weintraub liked it. Crawford, a town of 25,000, might have been reconstructed from some 19th-century mid-American template. The streets were wide and overarched with elms and oaks. Barnard's had been the second extrasolar Earth colony, centuries before the Hawking Drive and Hegira, and the seed ships then had been huge. Homes in Crawford reflected styles ranging from early Victorian to Canadian Revival, but they all seemed to be white and set far back on well-trimmed lawns. The college itself was Georgian, an assemblage of red brick and white pillars surrounding the oval common. Saul's office was on the 3rd floor of Placher Hall, the oldest building on campus, and in the winter he could look out on bare branches which carved the common into complex geometries. Saul loved the chalk dust and old wood smell of the place, a smell which had not changed since he was a freshman there. And each day, climbing to his office, he treasured the deeply worn grooves in the steps, a legacy of 20 generations of Knightenhelzer students. Sarai had been born on a farm halfway between Bassard and Crawford, and had received her Ph.D. in music theory a year before Saul earned his doctorate. She had been a happy and energetic young woman, making up in personality what she lacked in accepted norms of physical beauty, and she carried this attractiveness of person into later life. Sarai had studied off-world for 2 years at the University of New Lyons on Deneb Dry, but she was homesick there. The sunsets were abrupt, the much-vaunted mountains slicing off the sunlight like a ragged scythe, and she longed for the hours-long sunsets of home, where Barnard's star hung on the horizon like a great tethered red balloon while the sky congealed to evening. She missed the perfect flatness where, peering from her 3rd-floor room under the steep gables, a little girl could look 50 kilometers across tasseled fields to watch a storm approach like a bruise-black curtain lit within by lightning bolts. And Sarai missed her family. She and Saul met a week after she transferred to Knightenhelzer. It was another 3 years before he proposed marriage, and she accepted. At first, she saw nothing in the short graduate student. She was still wearing web fashions then, involved in post-destructionist music theories, reading Obit and Nihil and the most avant-garde magazines from Renaissance Vector and TC Squared, feigning sophisticated weariness with life and a rebel's vocabulary. And none of this gelled with the undersized but earnest history major who spilled fruit cocktail on her at Dean Moore's honors party. Any exotic qualities which might have come from Saul Weintraub's Jewish legacy were instantly negated by his BW accent, his Crawford Squireshop wardrobe, and the fact that he had come to the party with a copy of de Tresk's Solitude's Invariance, absent-mindedly tucked under his arm. For Saul, it was love at first sight. He stared at the laughing, red-cheeked girl and ignored the expensive dress and affected mandarin nails in favor of the personality which blazed like a beacon to the lonely junior. Saul had not known he was lonely until he met Saray, but after the first time he shook her hand and spilled fruit salad down the front of her dress, he knew that his life would be empty forever if they did not marry. They married the week after the announcement of Saul's teaching appointment at the college. Their honeymoon was on Maui Covenant, his first Farcast trip abroad, and for 3 weeks they rented a mobile isle and sailed alone on it through the wonders of the equatorial archipelago. Saul never forgot the images of those sun-drenched and wind-filled days. And the secret image he would always most cherish was of Saray rising nude from a nighttime swim, the core stars blazing above while her own body glowed constellations from the phosphorescence of the island's wake. They had wanted a child immediately, but it was to be 5 years before nature agreed. Saul remembered cradling Saray in his arms as she curled in pain. A difficult delivery, until finally, incredibly, Rachel Sarah Weintraub was born at 2:01 a.m. in Crawford County Med Center. The presence of an infant intruded upon Saul's solipsistic life as a serious academic and Saray's profession as music critic for Barnard's Datasphere, but neither minded. The first months were a blend of constant fatigue and joy. Late at night, between feedings, Saul would tiptoe into the nursery just to check on Rachel and to stand and gaze at the baby. More often than not, he would find Saray already there, and the two would watch, arm in arm, at the miracle of a baby, sleeping on its stomach, rump in the air, head burrowed into the bumper pad at the head of the crib. Rachel was one of those rare children who managed to be cute without becoming self-consciously precious. By the time she was 2 standard years old, her appearance and personality were striking. Her mother's light brown hair, red cheeks, and broad smile. Her father's large brown eyes. Friends said that the child combined the best portions of Saray's sensitivity and Saul's intellect. Another friend, a child psychologist from the college, once commented that Rachel at age 5 showed the most reliable indicators of true giftedness in a young person. Structured curiosity, empathy for others, compassion, and a fierce sense of fair play. One day in his office, studying ancient files from old Earth, Saul was reading about the effect of Beatrice on the worldview of Dante Alighieri when he was struck by a passage written by a critic from the 20th or 21st century. She, Beatrice, alone was still real for him, still implied meaning in the world and beauty. Her nature became his landmark. What Melville would call, with more sobriety than we can now muster, his Greenwich standard.